This is Trey with KGLP, and I'm here today with the McKinley Worker Justice Coalition. Would you guys like to introduce yourselves?
Good afternoon. It's great to be here, Trey. My name is Elsa, and I'm a community organizer with Somos Gallup, which is part of the McKinley Worker Justice Coalition.
Hello, my name is Teresa Espinosa, and I am here with my co-workers. Also, I work for Somos Gallup.
Hello, my name is Jose Olivas, and I'm a member also of Somos Pueblo Unido.
Hi, my name is Emerson Toledo, and I am with McKinley Community Health Alliance.
And we all basically represent, these are the two organizations that represent the McKinley Worker Justice Coalition, and including in that we have the newly, I think it was known as the McKinley Collaborative for Health Equity, and is now known as the New Mexico Social Justice and Equity
Institute,
yes. And so we're very happy to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, today we're talking about HIA that was completed a couple months back here. And the flyer or the report, you know, says two groups, one community. And really talking about the problems of the impact of wage theft and other employment violations on Native American and Latino immigrant workers in Gallup.
That's right. We, the McKinley Worker Justice Coalition formed back in 2015, and our goal is to strengthen and better the workplace conditions for workers here, low-wage workers in McKinley County. And one problem that we were seeing repeatedly was wage theft, complaints of discrimination, and other health and safety violation problems in the workplace. And so we decided to do this. The health impact assessment is basically community-based research. And so it was mostly Native American. So we interviewed 25 Native American workers and 25 Latino immigrant workers in the area of Gallup who worked in not all the time lived here, but mostly worked here and perhaps lived in the surrounding areas, and really delve into how does wage theft. First of all, we wanted to explore, does wage theft exist? Because according to the workers that are part of the organizations that conformed the McKinley Worker Justice Coalition, we were seeing that it was a problem in our membership. And so we thought, well, let's study the extent of the problem. How much does this go in the larger community? We also wanted to shine a light on this problem. We wanted to expose the problem. And we wanted to understand, is there a difference between how this impacts the Latino immigrant community and the Native American community?
Can we define what wage theft is?
So wage theft can range in a couple different ways.
Non-payment of overtime, misclassifications of employees, independent contractors, but not actually independent contractors, but you are an employee, but they use you as an independent contractor. So they're actually just writing you off.
They also you have to be making at least the minimum wage, which in McKinley County is $7.50 an hour. And sometimes as we see a lot in hotels, people are asked a lot to work off the clock. So they are asked to come in at 9 o'clock, but not clock in until 9:30. Or, you know, you're asked to work until 4 o'clock, but you're asked to clock out at 2 o'clock, you know. And so that's, you should be paid for every hour that you work. Another big issue is for tipped employees. Tipped employees should be making at least $7.50 an hour. And that's actually why Teresa's here, because she was a waitress not getting paid very much. I don't know if you want to talk about your story.
Well, I worked in a restaurant as a waitress, and I was getting paid $3 an hour. I wasn't making what I was supposed to make. Well, I'll be working 32 hours in total a week. And I was supposed to take $240 per week, but I wasn't making enough because I used to take not even the $240 that I was taking home. It took me 3 weeks most of the time to get $350 at work. So I was getting paid less than what I was supposed to be making in a job as a waitress. So if people are like experience the same things I'm experiencing, speak out. Don't stay quiet and put a restraint order on them or do something about it. Don't be quiet and do something about it. Honesty is worth it.
So I think even as far as, you know, that situation, I think you were saying something about $90 a a week was what you were making, you know, by the time everything was said and done. And that's nothing compared to, you know, if you were getting paid minimum wage at another job. So it's those kinds of situations where people feel like they don't have a choice, that they have to keep working there. And then the people that they're working for do not appreciate them or don't respect them enough to really, you know, work with them so that they're able to make a living, or, you know, wage that they can, you know, be able to sustain themselves on. You know, that's one of the biggest problems that, you know, were occurring. Some of the folks that were we had interviewed had been working with some of the fast food establishments in Gallup. And they were a lot of times scheduled just short of being full time. Sometimes they were not being allowed to. Again, you know, they would be told you can't clock in until this time, and they'd already been working 30 minutes or so, and then they would clock out, and then they'd have to stay another 30 minutes after their, you know, shift was supposedly over. They weren't getting the full pay for the hours that they were actually working. Just a lot of those kinds of situations where they weren't paid the for the work that they did, number one. Number two, sometimes there'd be some level of intimidation, mm-hmm. some exploitation that was going on. And a lot of times these folks feel very, they don't have a choice. They feel like they don't have a choice, and so they have a hard time being able to speak out about it, or to even approach your employer about, because you know where else are they gonna go? That's the kind of feeling that they had usually.
And I think Pancho can talk about his story about, you know, how he felt like that for months until he finally decided to speak out.
Yeah, because not regularly it's people that are getting wage theft of not getting paid enough, or what is their hours or their exact pay, right? But on my end, it happened the other way around. I was working from 100 to 120 hours a week, and I was just being said, don't worry about it, it's like a savings. I mean, and that's where it comes to an effect that you trust the people that you're working for or with, because you think that it's not going to happen to you, not because you're getting cut or not paid enough, but you are not getting paid your money that you're working for. I worked for maybe about 7 months, and I went up to Farmington. I went up to Farmington to open up a restaurant. It's called 505 Burgers and Wings. After 7 months that I worked there, it was me, my wife, and my son. I mean, we were practically living there from 100 to 120 hours a week. We didn't have a day off. We didn't get paid overtime. We didn't get paid time and a half. It was Monday through Sunday. After we decided it was enough, because we got paid, but we didn't get paid in full. It was just partial payments, $500 here, $600 there, which is not even covering. We should have been making at least a minimum of $1,000 a week. So I got partial payments, but my wife never got paid a dime. So there is that wage theft does exist, not only just for not getting paid your at least minimum wage, but not getting paid your full amount of wage.
So not getting paid all the hours in this case was there were two kinds of wage thefts in their case, in his family, because they were not getting paid all the hours that they were working, but they were also not getting paid overtime.
Yeah.
At all. So when he finally decided to file the complaint, he went to the Department of Workforce Solutions. And can you share what happened?
We went to the Workforce Solutions in Farmington. Their response was, we cannot do claims for more than $10,000. So then we just got left like, so then what do we do? I was owed $15,000. My wife was owed $25,000, and that's when we decided to go forth with the lawsuit at the administration of Susana Martinez, because they are not doing their job.
So, just to clarify, you know, we know that wage theft is not just morally wrong, and it deeply impacts, and we can talk about some of the findings of the HIA and how it impacts the community, not just families who are victims of the problem of wage theft, discrimination, and health and safety violations, but how it impacts the community at large. But one of the things is that it's not just morally wrong, it's illegal. The law protects workers against wage theft, and the agency charged to make sure that this law is being followed is the Department of Workforce Solutions. And unfortunately, they had either it was a misunderstanding, we don't exactly understand what was happening. They were turning a lot of people away, like Pancho, who were wronged and told that they had to access the courts, right? So you can file a complaint through the Department of Workforce Solutions to try to recuperate your money, and they'll do an investigation, you know. And then the other course of action is to go through the courts. But that's a lot more timely, and that requires you to be a little bit more knowledgeable about the court system, you know, maybe hire an attorney, which is one of the challenges that we found, especially in rural communities. There aren't enough legal services, especially enough resources for the organizations that are providing these legal services, like New Mexico Legal Aid, for instance. And so we decided to collect. We are working with other organizations from around the state, and there are a couple of plaintiffs from around the state that have decided to move forward in this lawsuit, and Pancho is one of those plaintiffs.
It's not so much as the fact of that you got to go through the legal system, but it's, I mean, you're trying to get money that you don't have, and then if you wanted to go forth with it through a lawyer or legal system, then it's going to cost you more of the money that you already don't even have. Because, I mean, when we were up there, I had to sell my house. I had to sell my car. I had to ask for loans to live up there. And I had to rent my house up here in Gallup so I could be at least living up there.
And that was one of the findings, right, that we realized is that wage theft is pervasive among both Native American workers and Latino immigrants alike. And we found that 70% of workers who participating in the study reported experiencing some form of wage theft. And the most egregious, the most common was non-payment of overtime.
Who were the participants of this study?
So we randomly selected people at places like churches, the flea market.
And that would be in the McKinley County area?
Like at the Gallup flea market. Mm-hmm. Just got up there and put a booth and just come on in and, you want to make a report of if you ever had a wage theft claim or if you were ever a victim of wage theft. Because there is people that are experiencing that, but they just don't know where to go to, what to do.
And then we further that identified people who had said, who specified during the interview process, that had experienced wage theft or other workplace violations, and we had a focus group. And I don't know, Emerson, you were also there during the focus group, if you would like to comment anything about that.
Well, the main thing that really came about, kind of just back to what we were saying, who and where do we do some of the questionnaires, and we actually had some people from the surrounding chapters around Gallup. People that were attending chapter meetings that were in the public, and they really didn't understand what wage theft was to begin with. And once we're able to establish what the definition of it is, and they're like, you know what, that happened to me. And then they were able to explain exactly what happened to them and how that came about. But the bottom line has always been, it seems like for me, from my perspective, that most people don't even realize they're being victimized or they're being cheated out of, they're being wronged, or that this is even illegal. They don't even know that part of it. So
what would you think would be some of the most common forms of wage theft that people wouldn't recognize right away?
I would say that things that, for instance, getting asked to work off the clock, it's kind of common. You're thinking, okay, well, and there is also in the hotel industry, a lot of people get paid per room. And it's hard sometimes to, at the end of the day, determine how much you actually get paid per hour. I just met with somebody last week who was actually getting, she was getting paid per hour, but she was being asked to work a lot of extra hours off the clock. And she was actually in the end getting paid per room. And it's really tricky the way that some employers, and we're not saying all employers are doing this, but the ones who are really, you know, making it's an unfair situation for the employers who are following the law. And so I think that the other way is also when you are asked, when you are told you're an independent contractor, but you're actually an employee.
Like in my case, when I came back to Gallup, I mean, I had to work. So my easiest and my fastest job to work was I started working construction. And I was working for a person, and at the end of the year, he was paying me, but he was giving me a check. But then at the end of the year, he gives me a 1099 like I was an independent contractor. When I wasn't an independent contractor, I was working by the hour for him, and I was also working with his tools. And I mean, I was his employee. I wasn't an independent contractor, because if I would have been an independent contractor, I understand it from my knowledge. Well, then it would have been on my time, on my own days, and at my pay.
So I think the other one is what Teresa just mentioned, especially with tipped employees, because typically you don't realize it necessarily how much you're getting paid per hour. So your listeners should really maybe now take out a calculator and just, you know, very simple math. How many hours a week do I work and how much do I get? You know, and especially for tipped employees, it has to be a daily count of how much do I make per day so that I get to, so I get to do the calculation of how much do I get paid per hour per day. And at the end of the day, you have to be making at least the minimum wage. So according to the study, that was actually the second most common was that they were not paid the minimum wage.
And there was something else I wanted to talk about really quickly. You were saying that because you were owed more than $10,000, that there was no sort of action that could have been taken. Why would you not be able to go forward if it's over $10,000?
Well, they just said it was, they couldn't prosecute them for more than $10,000.
And that's basically, the law doesn't say that. The law actually doesn't set any limits to the amount that an employee can file the complaint for or can go after, you know, and so the law doesn't specify any amount. The other way that people were being turned away by the Department of Workforce Solutions is by saying you can only try to recuperate a year worth of your wages that were stolen. And the statute of limitations is actually 3 years. So if you're just listening to this radio show and you, a year ago, 3 years ago, you know, to this date, the last day of your employment was 3 years ago, and you just realized you were being cheated or wronged, you can still file a complaint because the statute of limitations in New Mexico is 3 years, and you have 3 years to file a complaint. And so it was really very random, and that's why we have, that's why there is a lawsuit. And you know, the course of the lawsuit will go on, and there's some hearings coming up, and we'll follow that very closely. But in the meantime, here in Gallup, we want to make sure that there is a lot of information for workers so that they, one, understand what wage theft is, and two, understand the course of action. And we hope that listening to Pancho and Teresa's story can really help other workers realize what the problem is and sort of like what the solutions is. And we also have some good recommendations coming from the HIA that were actually community-driven, because this whole process is community-driven. So people from at the focus group, people who were part of the coalition, who included many community members, many low-wage workers who had been wronged in the past and had either experienced wage theft discrimination or health and safety violations, came up with community-based recommendations.
So we came up with five recommendations, and actually we've had some folks that are in the community, leaders in the community, who are attending these meetings, and they would provide some input and have some guidance about how we might be able to address this. Number one, the city and the county governments are urged to provide more extensive community education for workers and employers regarding workplace protection and remedies. Number two, given the distance between rural communities and administrative enforcement agencies, decision makers should garner support from more mobile or permanent investigators to assist people with the filing wage theft and other workplace complaints. Number three, local community leaders and government should establish ongoing working relationship with the state and federal enforcement agencies such as the New Mexico Human Rights Bureau and the U.S. Department of Labor, the Occupational Health and Safety Administration, as well as the Navajo Nation Human Rights Commission, to maximize enforcement resources in rural communities and to increase workers' rights awareness. And that's one of the biggest parts of this, is making sure that the people out there in the public know what their rights are. Four, local governments are encouraged to secure additional funding to improve access to workers' rights enforcement in rural communities, such as establishing a local office in the county to inform workers on protections, enforcements, and remedies under state and federal laws. Number five, city and county governments should also explore local ordinances and policies requiring business owners who are renewing or obtaining new licenses to self-certify that they are following wage and hour laws with penalties if they are not in compliance. So some of those things we just talked about, being able to, how do we facilitate a situation where, you know, everybody, is their time and their effort is respected and that they're paid for the work that they do.
And I think that in the end, what we realized is that the stories that we were hearing from our membership is the story of many workers. And unfortunately, in the case of the people that we interviewed, it was the majority of workers who were experiencing not just wage theft, but we also actually asked about the discrimination. And that was very interesting because we saw that nearly half of workers that did the study or that were part of the study reported experiencing discrimination in the workplace, 50%. And so that means, you know, how does that translate into our community? How does that impact our community? And what people said, for instance, very clear things that people said, you know, is I had to get a loan, like Pancho just mentioned. And so actually, 40% of people, of the respondents, say that they had to obtain a loan. And 11% of people said that they couldn't pay for educational programs because they didn't have money from the money that they couldn't get paid for. Or 14% of them say they couldn't pay for their home repairs. 20% of them say they couldn't keep up with loan payments, so they defaulted on their loans. And 40% of wage theft victims reported that the violation affected their health. So that's 40% of people. So what that translates to, Trey, is that we're seeing that this epidemic is not just impacting the working families. It's impacting everybody. Because when you have people who are being impacted health-wise, that means you're having to access more the emergency room services, perhaps. You know, taxing a system that's already taxed. I mean, McKinley County is considered one of the poorest counties in the state. And so we know there aren't a lot of resources. We're talking about people having to stress over how do we get our money back? I mean, Pancho, I remember Pancho sharing his story about how he would have to, and I don't know if you can tell this, Pancho, how you would have to travel to Albuquerque to try to find an attorney, and how it was really hard to follow up with the process, the DWS process, because you're in a rural community away from a main urban center.
So for like me, or for instance, any other people of the community that live here, there is not a good lawyer system that'll really take your case. You have to either go all the way to Farmington or all the way to Albuquerque to try and find a good lawyer, or maybe some statutory lawyer that'll maybe take your case. And then half of the time, or 90% of the time, they're going to ask you for about $4,000 to $5,000, because that's what they were asking me, when you're trying to get money that you don't have, and then you got to put up more. So you're going to have to either ask, get a loan, or just stay about it. And like Ilsa was saying, about 40% of the people that suffered health problems too about it is, for my case, my wife. I mean, we went up there, we were healthy. You know, I mean, I can't say we're not healthy anymore, but now she has to take high blood pressure pills because of all the stress that we went through. And I mean, once you go through high blood pressure, once it shoots up you can't take it away.
There's a lot of different ways in which, you know, you're talking about stress and a lot of other difficulties that go along with that. Even looking at, you know, even back to, you know, some of the ways that people are being victimized. I had an elderly gentleman who would literally walk from Thoreau and catch a ride from Thoreau. He did this for like more than 10 years, just getting into town because he never made enough money to buy a vehicle. But he could get to work. And then he was being paid for by the pieces he was doing. So he would, you know, buff jewelry or something like that. And you know, he would have to try to make enough money for it to be worth his while to show up. But it was when you calculated at the end of the month or the end of the year or the end of the week, he wasn't even making, you know, the minimum wage that, you know, that anybody else working would make. And he didn't realize it. See, that's the problem with this, is he didn't even realize that he wasn't even making minimum wage because he just wasn't educated enough about those, you know, we can call them rights or we can call it just the standard of having a minimum wage. He didn't understand that. And for him to articulate that in English, his primary language is Navajo. And so he didn't, when he did try to, you know, say something about it, he said, well, that's what the job is. You know, take it or leave it. And that was it. And there was no recourse for him. And there were probably five or six other workers that were there, kind of in the same boat. I mean, they, you know, by hook or by crook, they get to work. And then they're working by pieces, you know. And, you know, that's the kind of system that's out there that you really don't realize. I didn't realize it. It was these people kind of saying, well, is this wage theft? Is it, you know, is this what you guys mean? And a lot of times, yes. You know, just to measure it or just a rule of thumb, you know, minimum wage is $7.50 an hour. And if you calculate how many hours you work, you know, that's what you should be getting paid. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, some of the other details around whether or not you're getting benefits, are you full-time, you know, half-time, you know, what's the standards? And just being familiar with those things, I think, is a lot of what's missing out of this equation a lot of times.
Okay, so if somebody has questions about wage theft or would like to get in contact with you guys to try and help further what it is you're doing, where would they be able to get a hold of you or maybe have a meeting or anything like that?
So we're always available. We really have a lot of good information online. Mm-hmm. You can look for SomosUnPuebloUnido.org, and we have great information there in English and Spanish. We also have, you can call the office, 505-424-7832. And we have monthly meetings. So if you're interested, not just in finding out more information about your rights, but also changing this, we invite you to join the McKinley Worker Justice Coalition, because the more workers that are part of this, the stronger it is. And we just want to, you know, it is different for a community like Gallup to be facing this, you know, and we want to tell workers you're not facing this alone. And, you know, I remember going through the process with another Navajo woman who lived out in Arizona, very close to, but she worked here. And it was very, the process was very intimidating over the phone. And that's why one of the things that we would like to see is we would like to work with the administration, the state administration, so that we can have an administrator here, an investigator here, so there is face-to-face interaction. Mm-hmm. Because there is a lot of people feel there is lots of doubt and fear, even in coming forward, right? The study shows that close to 40% of people who actually complained about either wage theft discrimination or health and safety violations were retaliated against. Mm-hmm. So it's real. But we want to tell workers in McKinley County that they're not alone, that there are other workers fighting to change this, and that they're very welcome to join our coalition.
Did we have anything else that we wanted to talk about today?
Well, especially for young people like me that are barely experiencing their first job and they don't know anything about the wage minimum that they're supposed to be getting paid, first find out and talk to your family about the minimum wage that you're getting paid, because it happens most on young people that are barely experiencing their first job and they don't know the knowledge of working and they're working for the first time on this. So especially for those people that are looking for a job and applying and are starting a new job, make sure you get paid the minimum wage, because it's happening on young people, not just on olders. It's happening on young people as well.
Anybody else have any final thoughts?
That's it.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.